This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hi folks, this is Richard, and this is our night sky. We've got coming up, and I've also got Kay with me.
Hello.
Say hello, Kay. And this is... program. I always like to thank Dan Browden, who sponsors this program. Anyway, we've got this. Oh, who's that there? Yes, that lovely lady there is Jennifer. Say hello, Jennifer.
Hello.
Yeah, she's going to be joining us. And just to mention that we're open at the moment from Wednesday to Sunday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Okay, so that's what it's all about. And we also have the important things are guided tours, where you get all the storytelling from the ancient stories, from antiquity, and so on. And the other thing we do, of course, is Star Treks. Right? So just to bear all that in mind. So if you want any information, just give us a call at Stonehenge.
And self-guided tours.
Self-guided tours available throughout the day, yeah. Okay. And starting off, just looking north at the brightest stars in the sky, in order of brightness, Arcturus, of course, which is the brightest star, Vega, Altair, Antares, and Spica. And Antares is comes virtually overhead, and it is, of course, part of the great constellation of Scorpio. It's the heart of the Scorpion. And the Scorpion wraps itself around the brightest region of the Milky Way. So what we'll do is go in and have a little bit of a close look. And there is there. And when you look at a photograph like this, you're looking along the plane of the Milky Way. The bright regions, of course, are stars. But running along the centre, you've got dark regions, which once upon a time people thought they were just devoid of stars, but they're not. The dark regions you can see there are cosmic clouds of dust and gas from which new stars are forming. And indeed, looking along that photograph, you'll see some bright pinkish regions. That's where bright new stars are forming right now. All right. And that region comes overhead. And we're very lucky because that doesn't happen in most places of the world. You can actually see this as its best. And, of course, we've got the Scorpion there as well. So that's where the Scorpion is. Right. Okay. Now, I've just brought up a little tiny star on there, and this is directing us towards galactic centre. So if you head in that direction there, you'll end up at the galactic centre. Now, that's not actually the galactic centre itself because of those dark clouds are blotting it out. All right. So it's actually in the constellation of Sagittarius, all right? But that is the direction. But what we do know is that there is an enormously powerful radio source, and this is what was picked up a long, long time ago. We now call it Sagittarius A, but there's this powerful radio source, and we know where it is. It's 26,000 light years away, and it's actually a galactic center. And looking towards galactic center, if you could get there, what you would discover is the biggest black hole in the Milky Way galaxy. And as it says, the distance is 26,000 light years, which is at galactic centre. And the power of this black hole is equal to 4.3 million solar masses. So in other words, this black hole has swallowed up over 4 million solar systems. And indeed, it continues to illuminate and brighten because it is, to this day, is devouring solar systems at about one a year or something like that, or every 2 years. And these colossal black holes we find at the centre of every major galaxy. And of course, anything that falls into that hole vanishes from the universe. And if you were to fall into that black hole, as you fell, you would see the entire future of the universe come before your eyes. But unfortunately, that knowledge would be for you alone, because once you fall down that hole, you never come back. Okay? They're scary things, aren't they?
Definitely. Yep.
Of course, these have been theorized for a long while, but I suppose it's not going to be too long before we can begin to photograph these things, you know, with the increases in technology at the moment. Now, our two girls are very quiet. They're nodding their head all the time. They must think what I'm saying is correct. Okay, well, now what I've brought up is a photograph, and I've put the Milky Way galaxy. Well, it's not actually a photograph of the Milky Way galaxy. What it is of another galaxy, which we think is virtually identical in structure to the galaxy we're in, which is a barred spiral galaxy. And our galaxy has got a diameter, as it says there, of 87,400 light years. So remember what we've been talking about before, light time, right? It's the speed of light. So even if you could travel at the speed of light, right, it would take you 87,000 years to travel from one side of the galaxy to the other. Right? So it'd
be a bit hard to conduct a galactic empire, wouldn't it?
Exactly, yeah. Anyway, the Milky Way galaxy contains something in the region of 250,000 million stars. And our sun is just one of those stars. Of course, we always used to think once upon a time the sun was different from all the others. Right? And I just pulled up a map of the Milky Way galaxy as we know it. All right, there, and I'll bring up a little star. There it is there. That's where the position of the sun is, all right? And it orbits around there. I think it's in a period of about 200 million years. It takes a journey around the sun. But we can only see a small part of it because if you look at it, we're actually embedded in the Milky Way arms. And you can see those little bright regions. Well, they're not actually brighter. It's showing you what we can see when we look out at night or with telescopes. That's all we can see of the Milky Way galaxy because everything beyond that is blotted out of our view. Make some sense? That's right, so we're just travelling around in that huge system. And there they are there. Okay, so that's our Milky Way galaxy, and when we're looking out at night, when we look at the Milky Way, you get an idea of what it's a small part of the galaxy we're in, and most of the bright stars tend to lay along the path of the Milky Way. And, of course, when you go out at night, the first thing I always look for, which you should as well, is the Southern Cross, because this is your navigational beacon. I'll bring up the Southern Cross there. There it is there. And it's dead easy to pick because it's followed by two bright stars, which we call the pointers. And you can see those travelling behind. And the brighter of those two pointer stars, of course, is Alpha Centauri, which is, in fact, the brightest star. The nearest star beyond the solar system. It's Alpha Centauri. So in the future, when we go, if we're sending things out, that'll be the first place we visit. An interesting thing about the stars of Alpha Centauri is that it's a binary system, and it consists of two stars orbiting around each other. One's a little bit brighter than the sun, one's a little bit fainter, but they're both very, very similar, okay? And both, we don't know, have got planets. The only thing to think about, if life has evolved out there, that the Alpha Centauri system is a billion years older than our solar system. So there's a good chance anything out there would be vastly superior to us, which isn't very good, is it, Kay?
Unless they wiped themselves out already.
Well, that's right, yeah. I always point out to people when we talk about contacting other intelligent civilizations, we always imagine them, when we see them on movies, as very similar to ourselves in intellect and knowledge. All right, they're a bit more advanced than us. Hey, but what if they're millions of years advanced than us? And look what human beings have done around the planets, even to themselves. When a more advanced technological civilization encounters it's less advanced. What do? We did all sorts of terrible bloody things to them.
Well, they might keep us as pets.
Well, that's right, yeah. That's right. Well, that's right. When you look at animals and that sort of thing, they might look like this. And I, as I've said to people before, if you imagine an advanced civilization, they'd look at the Earth and think, oh, this is a lovely place. We should visit there. The only problem is that two-legged creature, which is the most dominant on the planet. Trouble is with this creature, it's wiping out and destroying the rest of the environment of the planet. Now, what we could do is reduce their population by several billion, and we'd save the planet. Isn't that a good idea? So, yes.
It assumes that they like oxygen or need oxygen. What if they don't?
I think they probably will, because there's certain basic things in the universe which are fundamental. Oxygen is the way in which to obtain energy. And there's really no other gas or substance that can replace it for a living creature. Right? So if we find another planet with oxygen on it, we can be pretty sure that there's life on there and there's advanced life. Because normally without animals to take in the oxygen, it simply disappears into the plant life and so on. Yeah.
So, rocks.
Yeah.
Kids lot gets in the rocks.
Yeah. Okay. So we found, once we found the Southern Cross, next thing we do is go in a straight line through the Southern Cross and we come to Achenar. And it's dead easy to pick because there's only bright star in that region of the sky. Come halfway in between and you're looking at the South Celestial Pole. That's the point around which the entire heavens appears to rotate. Now, of course, it's not the heavens that is rotating, it's the Earth. And if you were standing at the South Pole, that point, that little star that's just come up, would be directly overhead. All right? Anyway, that gives you the South Celestial Pole. Drop to the horizon from that spot and you're looking absolute due south. Now, everything in the sky appears to rotate about that central star, right? Including the Southern Cross. But the distance of the Southern Cross and Achenar from the South Celestial Pole is such that it never sets. So the Southern Cross over time will come down near the horizon, then it will come up again. So any time the sky is clear, the Southern Cross is going to be there somewhere. And, of course, once you've got no south, you can then begin to work out the other objects and things in the sky. Now, close to that line that we're travelling through to Achenar, there are two hazy patches of light, which we call the Clouds of Magellan, because Magellan was the person who discovered them. Well, he was the first person to record them, but let's put it that way. Yeah. And they look like detached portions of the Milky Way, but in fact they're not. They're actually satellite galaxies. There are other galaxies, small ones, that orbit around our galaxy. And these are the two large and small clouds. All right, we'll have a look at the large cloud briefly. All right. There's the large cloud. At the moment, the Magellanic clouds at this time of the year, because we are looking at what the sky would be looking like around about 8 o'clock in the evening, are near their lowest point in the sky. But they, like the Southern Cross, they know there's that. But in 6 months from now, these will be high in the sky. And that's, we'll have a closer look at them in about 6 months' time. Anyway, the distance of the large Magellanic cloud, as it points up there, is 169,000 light years. All right. So, on a cosmic scale, this is a long, long way away. So remember what I said to you before, when we're looking about time, we're looking back in time as well. So when we see the large Magellanic Cloud, we're seeing it as it was 169,000 years ago.
It may not even exist.
Well, the thing is if there was intelligent beings out there, and they're looking down at the Earth, the solar system, they're not going to see us, they're going to see the Earth as it was 169,000 years ago. Yeah. So, interesting, eh? Mm. And now I've just pulled up it, and you can see it's got some structure. We'll have a look at this in detail more, but that pink region you see at the top there is called the Tarantula Nebula. We will have a look at all of this in more detail later on, but it's the biggest star-forming region. And in fact, in the galaxy as well. In fact, all the way along the Magellanic Cloud, you find these big star-forming regions. And the reason for that is the gravitational tidal effect of our Milky Way is jostling everything and generating star formation. And as is brought up there, we know at the moment the Large Magellanic Cloud contains about 10 billion stars. Okay. Now we'll have a look at the Small Cloud. We'll bring that one up. And it's even more distant. Its distance is 190,000 light years. And it's almost got a tadpole shape to it. Once we begin, we can see those pink regions where new stars are being formed. But the weird shape of the Small Magellanic Cloud is actually due to the tidal effect of the Milky Way, which is gradually ripping this galaxy apart. And it'll do our galaxy will do exactly the same thing to the Large Cloud. And with the passage of time, these two galaxies will be absorbed into the Milky Way. And that's how you get giant galaxies. They simply swallow up smaller galaxies in the vicinity as we go around.
Sorry, Borg assimilation.
Eh?
Borg assimilation.
Right. Okay, so that's a Small Cloud there, but something else very interesting, because quite close to the Small Cloud is what appears to be a fuzzy star. I'll bring up a photograph of the Small Magellanic Cloud, and this object is called 47 Tucanae. And the reason for that, it was seen as the brightest of the stars in the constellation, the Toucan. I better bring the Toucan up. There it is there. Okay. It's the 47th brightest star in the constellation of Toucan. Long ago, when our ancestors divided up the sky into different constellations, then they numbered the stars, all right? So number one, or alpha, beta, gamma, delta, and so on, that's how it's done. Also, using numbers, one, the brightest star, two, the second brightest star. So 47 means it's the 47th brightest star in Tucana. But, of course, 47 Tucanae is no star at all. And that's the reason why it appears fuzzy. And in fact, it's one of the most awesome objects you can look at in the night sky. We'll have a closer look. Its distance is 16,700 light years. Now, just consider that, like Alpha Centauri we're looking at, is just over 4 light years away. It's for this thing to be almost 17,000 light years away, and you can still see it with the unaided eye, tells you it must be really bright, which indeed it is. We'll bring it up there. There's a photograph of it. All right. I tell you what, in a telescope, this is an absolutely awesome object to look at. Crowded with stars, right? In fact, over 200,000 stars. And we call these globular clusters because they are a spherical shape, and this is one of the closest to us. But in the outer regions of the galaxy, we see these globular star clusters. Well, let's go in a little bit closer. And the closer you look in, right, the more stars you see. And when we get down towards the centre of the cluster, the distance between the stars is 0.1 of a light year. Now, that's 50 times closer than the average star distance around in our part of the galaxy. Right? So that's really close together. So cosmic collisions are not unlikely. And, of course, almost certainly near the centre is going to be a black hole as well.
It looks 2D there, but it's actually a ball, like a ball.
It is a ball, yeah. Mm. And that's what you'll notice. It's a little bit difficult to spot with the unaided eye. Well, you can see with the unaided eye when you know to look, but it doesn't stand out. But a pair of binoculars, you'll be able to see it as a fuzzy ball. But even with a small telescope, they begin to look absolutely awesome objects.
That's very close together, 0.1 light year. There'll be a lot of interactions and stars throwing each other around.
Exactly.
Gravitational influences.
I've just brought up a picture. Imagine being on a planet near one of those stars, what the night sky would look like. There will be hundreds, if not thousands, of stars brighter than the Milky Way, brighter than the moon in the sky. So it would be a pretty awesome object. However, the chances that we're going to find advanced civilizations out there is very small, because that's when we come up with the age of this cluster, right? And it turns out, having a closer look at it there we can see it there, its age is 13 billion years. Now, this makes it only slightly older than the age of the universe, right? And so what this is actually a relic. It's the material left over from the formation of the galaxies. So originally, we believe that there were lots and lots of these globular clusters formed, and because some of them are close together, eventually they get swept up and they form the central nucleus of the galaxy, and then the gravity of that draws the gas and dust in for younger stars and so on. But here and there, all the way around the Milky Way, nearby, we can find these globular star clusters. And as I say, they are the relics, they're the bits and pieces left over from the formation of the sun. Anything to add to that?
It's just mind-bending.
Well, you can see what Jennifer was talking about, the spherical shape and that there. You can see it quite easily there. Yeah. Okay, so that's the basic things I wanted to show you tonight. So just remember, go out when it's a clear night, not as light as out there at the moment, which is snowing. Was it snowing on the... Remember, Tuckers, when you came over? Yeah. It was, yeah. Yeah, it's freezing cold down here as well. Anyway, once the sky clears, during the winter time, we get the best night skies. Unfortunately, it is the winter, because that most brilliant region of the Milky Way, which we were looking at earlier on, comes directly overhead. So you've got that and lots of other stars. So begin to find your way around. And just to mention that... Stonehenge RTRO, we're open from Wednesday to Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And we also offer tours. So if you want, you can always give Kay a call on that number.
You can have tours outside those hours, but you've got to contact me.
Yeah, that's when you can just turn up those times and that there. But otherwise, if you wanted to organise a guided tour where you get all the storytelling or whatever and taking you through to antiquity. And a lot of people get absolutely amazed when they come out to Stonehenge, because what we built out there is not a replica of what's on Salisbury Plain, because if you want your stone circle to work, it has to be designed for its specific spot on the Earth. And that's why every stone circle around the world is unique. And the one that we built out here was designed for its specific spot on the Earth, and it was built so people could see how these things work. And they're like an ancient computer, because looking at the stones and the shadows they cast, you've got all this valuable information on time and space and so on. Yeah. I think you were part of building that, weren't you, Jennifer?
Yes, I was. Yeah. It was a big project, a lot of fun, and it was definitely a group job.
Yeah. But I think what we saw there is that it brought people together.
Absolutely.
And indeed, when we were getting near the end of the project, people started getting worried, like, what are we going to do with our weekends now? Because people would come there, we'd be building, we'd have food, and then we'd all go out to down the pub, wouldn't we, afterwards and so on.
Yeah.
So it became a real social thing. And I can imagine that's what it would have been exactly the same in building those other stone circles thousands of years ago. And there's lots of evidence that different stones were placed by different tribes. Right, so they would have come together, and yeah, it's all sorts of fun.
Absolutely,
long time ago. So that's what those all about. So there's a lot more in these things than you think there is. Yeah, as I say, like a stone computer. Anyway, that's it for now. So we'll catch you up in a couple of weeks' time. Anything more to add, Kay? That's it. So it's time for us to go off and have a cup of tea. Yes.